Well, hello, my friends. Welcome back to another chat and another confession of a PYP teacher. My name is Lou Gerlach with Think Chat, and welcome to Confession 135. My mind is blown by that, to be honest. 135 episodes, and you keep listening. What's wrong with y'all people? All right. Anyway, welcome back to another episode where we're going to ex continue to explore culturally responsive teaching and the brain by Zaretta Hammond. And this episode really speaks to me directly to my heart. And I hope it resonates with you. Zaretta, oh my gosh, she focuses on building deep alliances with our learners in chapter six of this fabulous book. And we're going to uncover some of the parts, but it's not impossible to unpack everything. So have fun reading and finding your own nuggets of wisdom and layering on to the process. This chapter begins with a quote by Rita Pearson, who says, "Every child deserves a champion, an adult who will never give up on them, who understands the power of connection and insists they become the best that they can possibly be." Many of you have probably already watched this very famous TED Talk. I had to take a moment and rewatch Miss Pearson's TED Talk from 2013 because it resonates today. And we're 11 years later, and many of the same systems that have served schools still exist that we were trying to fix in 2013. And I had to take time to rewatch it to get uplifted. She was certainly a powerful educator, and her words just touched me. And this whole chapter have touched me, to be honest. I just feel so connected in a way because this is where my heart lies. And to set the stage for this chapter, Hammond purports, as culturally responsive teachers, we have a particular duty to help dependent learners build their intellective capacity so that they are able to do more independent learning and higher order thinking. And when I read this passage, I connected to this past week in our TCC book club, where we're exploring the difference between tasks, understanding and skills in the fabulous book Seen, Heard, and Valued by Leanne Young. And one thing that Ms. Young points out is that if we only teach tasks, we create a learning disposition that can only replicate processes as directed by the teacher. Think about that. They're dependent, and learners are not able to use the skills on their own because they don't understand the underlying purpose of the task. And stay with me that our role as culturally responsive teachers is to help children to become independent, right? Critical and creative thinkers. And where I see the parallel here between my other book club is that by only teaching tasks, craftivities, right, where we make a cutie patootie little thing that goes home or is displayed in the hallway, but it has no rhyme or reason to the purpose of the learning. And I used to make them, and when I got to know better, I was forced to make them. And the one thing that I really resonated this week is that what we're striving to do is we're trying to get children to understand what they learn and utilize certain skills to support that understanding. That makes sense. And how I connected this is that when I'm thinking about those understandings, I naturally think of concepts. And of course, as a PYP teacher, I'm thinking about skills from the lens of the ATL. Approaches to learning because they help students Make relationships between content and the bigger ideas. Learners are challenged to show the concept in action and give examples from their perspective. It's not like, this is a, example of relationship, and you can't even give me an example of what that looks like in practice and how it's related to you. That right there is understanding. And teaching the purpose of the skills, not just teaching skills, but teaching children why those skills are important. When we do that, it helps learners to understand how to use them and how to self-select them in the future based on not only their content, but their context. Think about that. I don't know how I wove in Leanne Young with Zaretta Hammond, but my brain is tired already. But these two powerful women link up at certain places where they're talking about that to give access to all, we have to go beyond teaching just the facts. Because the facts do not lead to development of skills and to bigger understandings of how the world works. And that is the difference between children in impoverished areas where parents don't have the access outside of school to build that network if it's not happening within the school. That's a given. Having worked in those types of schools and having worked in affluent schools, there is no comparison. And that's where the equitable divide happens. And so, what if we're servicing and supporting learners who are struggling to understand these skills, struggling to make big connections? Well, we have to help them switch to an academic mindset and go away from learned helplessness. So Hammond presents two ways of thinking that shapes a child's learning experiences, which is academic mindset and learned helplessness. She says that academic mindset is defined as a student's attitudes, beliefs, and dispositions about school, learning, and his or her capacity as a learner that are associated with effort, perseverance, and positive academic achievement. So I internalize this as the learner is recognizing their efforts pay off if they just hang in there and have some perseverance and have a positive mindset. This is reinforced from a strong school culture that focuses on a growth mindset rather than achievement performance. Granted, we need to have achievement, but if it's the sole thing and people have testing anxiety and people feel like, oh, my job's going to rely on it, that is no way to live. And children do not work, well, adults do not learn and work in that environment effectively. And it impacts learner attitudes, beliefs, and dispositions about school and about learning. And oh, so many ideas come in my mind. But I want to focus in on what's the difference of learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is the student's belief that they have no control over their ability to improve as a learner. Breaks my heart. A child believes that they have no control over their ability to improve as a learner because they do not believe that they have the capacity. So they do not exert the effort when faced with a challenging work assignment or a new skill to develop because they feel like, well, why should I try? I've been trying this whole time and I'm failing anyway. So I'm gonna fail last time, so I'm gonna fail this time. And this is reinforced by the relationships that have been created with teachers and peers, bar none. And this is why Hammond's been talking about creating relationships all along, is because If we don't take the time to build relationships with kids, we look at them as nothing but young people who are amount to nothing. They will amount to nothing. And unfortunately, I've seen it. I've seen that type of teacher mentality in action. And I'm still, as an adult, traumatized by it, by how children were treated. And these are young, impressionable beings who are still in elementary school or primary school. I don't even know how they're navigating secondary school at the moment with these beliefs that have been embedded by the safe space, their school system. But I can also be inspired by this in regards to how do people who are in abject poverty, people who have, and they don't even have, I know of a young man who's in his 20s who has everything open to them. Almost too many resources in their life that it's almost become an encumbrance where he can't move forward and he's constantly lost because he's never had to work for things. And so it can go of having too less and too much. It's about getting it just right. And when I think about this, it reminds me of a book that I read called Heading Out. And I remember learning about this experience in my first year as a teacher in a professional development. And it was the story about a gentleman named Ben Carson. And I have used it with countless students and will use it again next year. And he grew up with a single mother and his brother in an at-risk community. His mother worked three jobs, so she was not home very often. And so there was a lot of times that Ben and his brother were at home acting a fool. And when she got wind of it, she demanded that he and her his brother had to turn in a book report a week. And so she didn't tell them what they had to write it on. It's just they had to read books and write a report. And what they didn't know is that their mother was illiterate. She didn't know what they were writing anyway. But she wanted to get them out of trouble, getting away from terrible influences. And what Ben talks about is how he went to the public library and where he first started was his fascination with rocks. Because he saw lots of rocks by the train tracks where he lived, and he was wondering how do they come to be and all of that. And he was quite known as the dummy in the class, a child who just could not perform, was constantly ridiculed in front of the classroom, scores read out loud. Oh, I die. That is like, can you imagine how horrible that would be? And through his knowledge that he acquired by writing these book reports, all of a sudden he found himself making connections to the world around him and starting to increase his ability to perform. And within a couple years, he went from being the lowest to the highest student in the grade level and then within his classroom. And this was all commended to his mother, right? And he began a lifelong reading of science, which transcended into him becoming a prominent surgeon at Johns Hopkins University and their research hospital. And he was one of the first neurosurgeons to successfully separate twins that were conjoined at the brain. So imagine if he hadn't switched from learned helplessness, right, to this mindset of switching towards that I can have an academic mindset. Think about what the world would be like without his contributions. And so I've been thinking a lot about all of this and what turns a child from learned helplessness to academic mindset. It's all about building alliances. And Hammond talks a lot about this, that building alliances is crucial to evolving as a learner. When we examine the difference between academic mindset and learned helplessness, it's amazing how the triad of alliances there, and this is the understanding between a teacher and a learner, that there is a shared goal to creating successful learning experiences and development, that the learner trusts in their teacher to guide and provoke their thinking to become better. And Hammond shares three components to this alliance. She says that it is a shared understanding and agreement to tackle a specific goal. It's a shared understanding and agreement about the tasks necessary to reach the goal, along with confidence that these activities will lead to progress. And it's also a relational bond based on mutual trust that creates an emotional connection and a sense of safety for the client or the child in order to do the hard work necessary to reach the goal. So when I look at this list, I want to know exactly how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to do this with every student in my class. So let's take a moment to break down each of these, okay? And I'm not providing you with the strategies Hammond is. I'm taking some bits from another section and I'm going to utilize them as evidence of how I might do that. Are you ready? I know I am because, man, this stuff is pretty good. So a shared understanding and agreement to tackle a specific goal. The first thing that came to my mind was setting a goal using a success criteria. As the educator, you know the specific skills learners will need, whether they be cognitive, affective, or metacognitive, to understand the content they'll be exploring. So I'm going to choose skills that I'm going to put into the success criteria that I know I'm going to teach anyway. So I'm, and this is going to frame out the unit of inquiry. So if there's about 6 weeks, I'm going to have six bullet points from the ATL, all right, underneath the sub-skill and their criteria. And I'm going to ask learners to consider, out of the six skills that we're looking at, which one is a glow that they can do 3 to 5 different ways alone? Alone. And that they can do them well. And that they don't repeat. Because that's clear. Because some children will say, oh, I can ask questions at the, on the playground, and I can ask questions at home, and I can ask questions at the grocery store, but it's a repetition of the same skill. We want to see variance. And then I'm going to ask them to select a skill that's a grow area that they can do in a small group, but struggle to complete it on their own. So they have a working relationship with this idea. It's like at the instructional level, and I want to make it more independent. And then see how they might develop the skill through these different lenses of cognitive, affective, and metacognitive lens. And this will allow them to see that their learning is a whole and not just understanding the content, right? Like, I'm gonna lean into my affective skills, I'm gonna lean into metacognition here in order to make this happen. So if this is too much for you and you're like, I don't even know what you're talking about, then here's some ideas that Hammond shares on page 95 and 96. She says, ask the student to identify what they think is getting in their way for them around a specific learning target. And what we mean by that is, I can ask questions. Why do you think you don't know how to ask questions? And then together select a learning target that's small, specific, and significant. All right, you're going to use the Wiederhole question matrix as a scaffold to ask questions, and you're going to use a variety of questions, not just in the factual area. That would be like small, specific, and significant. Okay, The second way to build academic mindset, a shared understanding and agreement about the tasks necessary to reach the goal, along with confidence that these activities will lead to progress. We can always assess the success criteria and ask learners to assess the goal, the why, and ask them how did they break it down into smaller ideas and connect them together. Then consider what individual tasks that needed to be completed first before, you know, we make relationships. And another way is by creating a pact. Hammond outlines some ways to make a pact happen naturally in your class. I'll only refer to some of them, but they can be found on pages 95 to 96. She says, set a deadline for mastering the learning target. Set up benchmarks for check on progress and offer corrective feedback. Share what you're willing to do as the student's ally. Isn't that beautiful? Let them know that you are their partner in this process. Be specific how you will support them. And then be explicit about your belief in their capacity to master this learning target. But please be authentic. Don't say something that you don't believe. Well, that comes from Hammond, not from me. And there are many suggestions on page 96, but this is the heart of how we can move forward with supporting learner progression. And finally, the third way of improving academic mindset, a relational bond based on mutual trust that creates an emotional connection and a sense of safety for the student in order to do the hard work necessary to reach the goal. At the heart of all of this is authenticity. You won't know how to connect with your with every learner. You're just not, because you can't read every child's mind. And this is okay. But they still need to know that you believe in their capacities to succeed. And this can come in a variety of informal ways. And it's that encouraging tap. It's the tap on the desk, that man, you're high five. And something that I appreciate are some helpful tips that Hammond provides on pages 100 to 101. It begins with using kid-friendly vocabulary to clear processes for reflecting and acting on teacher feedback. It doesn't matter how you do this, but be consistent. Our learners crave consistency from the teachers because it may be the only safe place in their world. So this leads us to feedback to move forward. And when learners have clarity of how to move forward, they're more easily able to apply it back to their practice. Hammond provides many different ideas about types of feedback, and here are some highlights. So on page 103, she talks about quality feedback has some distinct characteristics, and I love these. She said it is instructive rather than evaluative, where we're focusing on like the rules that are missed. It is specific and in the right dose, meaning we're only going to put 1 to 2 points of feedback. It is timely, meaning, hello, within the same week that it was given. It is delivered in a low-stress, supportive environment, where they know that you're there to guide them and not to judge them. And then on page 105, she talks about, well, sometimes the feedback you have to give is negative. And so how do you do that? You have an explicit holding of high standards, meaning this is what has happened, but we need to get you better. And this is possibly how we do it. But it also encourages with a personal assurance, hey, I'm your partner in this. I know this is a struggle for you, but you know what? Here's some simple and specific actionable steps that are going to get you there. How about we work on these this week? All of that is going to help to turn that negative into a positive. And if you want further information on this process, considering and examining the asset-based feedback protocol on page 105, which provides step-by-step directions on how to give feedback and check on progress. You won't be disappointed because it's amazing. I know that there have been so many ideas in this chapter. Even going through it a second time, my brain is like, poof. But it's all about supporting our learners so they can be successful. More importantly, so they know that we have their backs and we won't let them fail. Because we all make mistakes in this world, but our role as the teacher is to guide them towards independence. And that's all I got to say about that, my friends. I hope this episode didn't tire you out. I don't know, I'm ready to go to bed, but it was fabulous beyond words. And I can't wait for the next one.